I wanted to start this morning, maybe somewhat obviously, with a Matthew McConaughey quote, right? Listen. I want to tell you a couple things. You're really going to like this. Okay, listen to these words. Okay, this is what he said. It's more than hard to know what to believe in. It's more than hard to know what to believe in. It's hard to believe. Cultural point of view. There's political spin and media bias and all sorts of half-cocked conclusions that swirl about in social media. And he's saying, boy, it's hard to know what to believe. But I want to say on a bigger scale, something you already know. It's hard to have faith. It can be very hard. It burdens me to think about this church and your faith because I know there are dark forces in this world that are, in many cases, exclusively bent on derailing your faith. I don't know if you think about this very much, but to the degree that Satan is roaming the earth, to the degree that the minions are at work, to whatever degree that is, to whatever degree God is allowing darkness to be a part of the human experience, it is primarily focused on derailing your faith. It's part of the reason it's so hard. You could consider it an uphill battle at the very least. It's hard. It can feel a little bit abstract at times. We don't even know always exactly what it is. If we started a discussion together as a group on faith and we started by going around the room and asking you to give us your best definition of faith, I think we would start with quite a bit of variation of even about what it actually is. Some might describe it as a blind leap. Some might describe it as a warm internal security. Some might describe it as private. Some might describe it as maybe naive or outdated. Some might say that it's unwavering. Some might say it's a journey. It's up and down. You would hear things like, we had a lot of faith in ourselves. Sometimes I have faith, sometimes I don't. I'm a faithful person. Keep the faith. I lost faith in humanity. Have faith in the process. I lost faith in the church, but not in God. I mean, it's the word itself is used in so many different ways. So we're going to spend the next 8 weeks talking about faith and maybe in particularly our statement of faith, the one we embrace as a church. What do we mean by faith in a Christian context? We're going to talk about it. Why do we have the statement of faith that we do? And what do each of those tenets really mean? We're going to talk about that for the next 8 or 9 weeks. Why are there inconsistencies in statements of faith across denominations and faith traditions? We'll talk about it. What do we do when Christians disagree on fundamental doctrines of faith? We got some plans to dig in for the remainder of this year and into 2026 along these lines. The structure will be the statement of faith. We're just going to go week by week through the different tenets. If you haven't seen that, you can find it on our website. I don't know precisely where it is, but you'll find something about what we believe, our beliefs, our statement of faith, or something like that will link you to our basic tenets. And we've got hard copies, I think. Can anybody validate that? There's hard copies out there? Maybe. There will be some. So if you want to just grab them, you can get kind of a head start on that. We're also going to use a metaphor throughout the series, the trellis and the vine. A trellis and a vine. Maybe in short, spoiler, the statement of faith is like a trellis. It's like a trellis. I'll introduce that a little bit more in just a little bit, and we'll use that throughout. We're going to have some supplemental voices. And we're going to bring those folks, friends that we know that have perspectives and experience and education and different spaces of topics and challenges in our culture. We're going to invite them to come to our third Thursday events. and be a part of that and broaden our perspective and give us some things to dig into and dialogue about. And then we're going to have some special conversations on the Mondays immediately following those Thursdays. So we'll introduce some topics, we'll shake it up a little bit, stir the pot a little bit, and then invite those of you back that would like to dig in deeper and have more conversations. We'll do that. The very first one will be October 23rd. We've got a month here to ramp up for that. And we've invited, I don't know if you've heard the name of Lori Krieg yet, but you will eventually. We have been fortunate enough to get to know Lori before she rockets to quite a bit of popularity in the country. It's happening, and it's happening fast. She's got a lot of experience and background. She's a mom of, married a mom of a couple or three kids. I've met her. We've seen her in a couple different spaces. Invited her into our collegiate space, and she did a phenomenal job there. She has does a lot of work with gender and sexuality, and she has redoubled and refocused her attention on families with young kids, young under the age of 12, and starting to prepare those parents how to deal with those particular issues and culture that they are certainly going to end up head on with at earlier and earlier ages. They just recently signed her on to really the preeminent space for all of that conversation. She's got a role there, and she's just written another book. She's coming, and it's really our privilege to have her because I think it's going to be impossible in the near future. Okay, so we've got the statement of faith. We got this metaphor, the trellis and the vine. We got some supplemental voices. We're going to have these conversations. And then we got two particular aims, I would say, in addition to just a better understanding of what we believe. The first one is a truer and deeper experience of unity. We talked about this and introduced this thought when we went through the book of Philippians a little while back. This idea that the church is called to be something more than uniform, but to be unified, which what's implied there is to be unified where there is diversity, where there is difference, sometimes even severe differences. The world, when it comes into conflict with anything else, whatever association or tribe you're in, or even some conflict, or you start to think a little differently than the internal workings of that, you're going to be outcast. There's going to be a division. The church is maybe the one place in the midst of culture where we have the opportunity to show something very different. That we can have differences, that we can be different. We can have even doctrinal shadings that are different. We can even stay together when it might be even personally difficult or painful. There is an argument to be made that one of our greatest testimonies as a body of believers, as a faith community, is the ability to believe in Jesus as the King and allow nothing to separate us as we continue to grow in the direction of Him. When we want to look at our doctrines and our beliefs, but at the center of all that is Jesus, and we want to show the world that even though we're not all exactly alike, we're committed to one another and we stay together for bigger reasons. The other thing is to reimagine and remember the beautiful future that God has mapped out for believers. That future, perfect shalom, peace, all things as they should be, your identity firmly rooted and your discovery of you as the person that God designed and hoped for and is working toward, that beautiful future as a driving force and maybe even the culmination of the foundation of truth that we grapple with and the life of faith that we live. There is this beautiful future that we need to stay in touch with. So that's sort of the structure right there. Statement of faith, metaphor, trellis, new voices, conversations, aiming at unity and a reinvigoration of how the future that God has promised us impacts our life today. Okay? Let's dig in a little bit here. I am gonna have us look this morning at one of my favorite characters in the Bible. You really could look at almost any character in the Bible and see a case study on what faith is and how it works and how it's managed. I mean, almost every story in the Bible, maybe by definition, is a story of faith. But I love this story of Gideon. You know, Gideon, it's in Judges chapter 6 and 7, if you got a Bible and you want to turn there, or on your devices. You know, Gideon, he lived around 1,000, 1,100 BC, give or take. And he's the guy that started writing Bibles and putting them in hotels around the Middle East. That's who we're talking about. That's who we're talking about. That is not who we're talking about. So what's going on about this time in the Israelite life is this is the season where they were ruled by judges. A judge was made head of the Israelites, and that's the space we're in. And the Israelites, they have a pretty predictable sort of historic wake. They trusted God and they flourished, and they didn't trust God and they were oppressed. I don't know if you can relate to that, but that's how life goes for them. It's how life goes for really anybody. You trust God and he is present. And when you don't trust God, life goes upside down. The wheels come off. And here we have this guy, Gideon. He is part of one of the tribes of Israel, the weakest maybe of all the tribes. And he himself is the least of those in his family within that tribe. He was a nobody. And he was living at this time, which would have been about 7 years of oppression. The Midianites were burning their crops, stealing their animals. They were completely economically and psychologically oppressed. They were hiding in corners to try to scrape together some food and alive for one another. And Gideon is visited by the Lord. Before that happens, the angel of the Lord showed up to the Israelites in the form of a prophet. God sent a prophet, and this is what he does. Sends some truth to try to get the attention of his people. He basically, I'm going to give you a quick rundown here, and then we're going to dig in deeper. He basically says, listen, I told you not to worship the gods of the land in which I gave you. Don't worship the gods of those people. And you haven't listened to me. So listen, you have, and this should ring true in our ears. God is saying to him, listen, you've allowed the culture to redefine your faith. You have bought into what the culture says is important. You've bought into what the culture is telling you should depend on. You are trusting things other than me. That's why your life is upside down. You've abandoned your faith in me. And then the angel of the Lord challenges Gideon directly. And he starts where we just finished, 4 weeks on identity, if you've been around. And the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon. He said, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Now Gideon, like I said, was in the weakest tribe. He was in the least in his family. And he was at this very moment hiding in a wine press, a big, huge, probably carving in the ground or in the stone, threshing wheat, trying to put together a little preparation for some food. He was living in fear. And the angel of the Lord tells him who he is. The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Gideon is confused by this. The text in the NIV says that he says, pardon me, my Lord, which in our vernacular would have probably been more like, whoa, 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 time out, wait a minute. If the Lord is with us, and Gideon goes right to human excuse number one. Hey, wait, if the Lord is with us, have you ever thought that? Have you ever thought that God has abandoned you? Yeah, that's where we go first. That's our natural inclination. Where's God? And God is saying, where are you? Gideon's confused. He legitimately is like, if you're with us, then how come this is going on? I think it's humorous to me that the Lord doesn't even answer that question. He just ignores the ignorance and basically challenges Gideon to take action, to move. He said, go in the strength that you have, which isn't much, go in the strength that you have and save Israel. You there, hiding in the shadows, you in the weakest tribe, the least in your family, you go with the strength that you have and save Israel. Where do you go to next? Excuse number two. You know what human excuse number two is? First one is, well, God, where are you? Why'd you let me down? He goes, I'm here. Go. Excuse number two, I'm not good enough. I can't do what you're asking me to do. How can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest. I'm the least in my family. The Lord answers, I will be with you. And you will strike down all the Midianites. I will be with you, and the future that I promise will happen. And then Gideon does start to move. He's questioned God. He's said, wait a minute, I don't understand what's going on. He's working it out. And eventually he does take some action. And this is shocking to me. He says to God, I'm going to go put together a little offering. I'm gonna maybe practice a discipline that I used to practice. I'm just gonna do this thing. Can you hold on a minute? And God says, I'll wait. That might be one of the most profound things in the whole Gideon story. God is saying, I need you to go. And the guy says, I'm going to do this first. Is that cool? And God says, I'll wait. God understands what it's like for humans to have faith, to follow him, and obey. And it's not a straight line, and it's not clean, and it's not perfect. God shows surprising patience. God shows up in that offering and that exercise that Gideon does, and it inspires him to even greater faith. And he is tearing down the idols and the temples and the poles and the things that represent worship to the god called Baal. And he's tearing them down. One of them is his father's idol to Baal. And he builds another idol with all that stuff that he tore down to God. And the next morning, he does it at night because he's afraid. It takes 10 friends, and they do this in the middle of the night. It's like a college stunt. And in the morning, the people see it, and they are fearful and furious. They find out that it's Gideon, and they want to put him to death. And his father starts to come to his senses and says, whoa, 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 whoa. If Baal is all that in a bag of chips, why don't we let him deal with Gideon? This is great wisdom from the father, right? He's been out of line. He's the one that built the thing, and now he's got his son who's making everybody angry, and they're worried and they're fearful of what's going to happen. And he says, let's just, and so they rename him. They rename Gideon. And his name means, let Baal contend with him. Which is also a nice little sidestep by all the people, because they basically gave him a name that says, I'm the one that did it. So they're like, let's give him a name. It's a big arrow pointing to him, at least. So the rest of us don't get in trouble for tearing down this whole thing. Now the enemies realize what's going on, and they start gathering together and making advances. And it's going to get a lot worse for them. And Gideon makes a call. He takes another step of faith. He makes a call, blows a trumpet, sends out messengers to gather an army. This guy, this young man who was hiding, I don't know how long ago, is now calling to convene an army. And the next thing you know, he's got 32,000 men that he's commanding ready to go to battle against probably 125,000 or 150,000. And then he goes to God and remembers the promise of what he's going to do, but he hesitates and he says, I want to do some things. I need you to prove to me again that you're in this. He wavers a little bit. He doubts. There's two cycles here. While all this is crazy, amazing stuff is happening, he is doubting. It's a very brief overview. We're going to dig a little bit deeper and pull out some particular things about faith. But we certainly see a picture of faith here, right? You can see it. And I think it could certainly be said that you either have faith or you don't. Maybe you could say that. You either have it or you don't. But it is also true, clearly true, that faith is a journey. Faith is a journey. Faith can mature and grow. So let me point out a few things. Be good to just, probably mostly just reminders. First, faith originates with God. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak tree in Ophrah. This is where he met Gideon. The angel of the Lord came to him. Paul in Ephesians says, "For it is by grace you've been saved through faith, and this is not from yourselves, it's the gift of God." Point being that although we'll see, faith does include choices and actions within our power. It originates with God. We don't conjure up the capacity to have faith within ourselves. God awareness, the epiphany, the awakening, the seeing, the faith, the believing comes from God. He gives us eyes to see, ears to hear. God calls us to himself and provides the means of faith. It starts with him. Which, right, makes us think having faith is out of our control. It comes from God. So if he didn't give it, then I don't have it. If I show my face, because God is having that, but that's not quite true. The real and critical question is, will you respond and answer God's call to the journey of faith? When he called Gideon, he said, "This is what I'm going to do. This I promise. Am I not sending you?" What he's saying is, go and take on the Midianites. I will be with you. Are you going to go? Are you going to heed the call? Am I not sending you? What is your answer? Are you going to respond? In the Psalms, we read this today. If only you would hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. It's clear there is a God. He's in charge. He's got a plan. He made you. He loves you. The question is, God is prompting us. He is calling us, shifting us, directing us. What do we do? Is your heart responding to him? That's the biggest question. Will you, do you believe? If you do, then it's upon you now to move, to go, to obey, to struggle, to search, to trust, to lean into the journey. Pardon me, Lord, but how can I save Israel? The struggle of faith almost is always rooted in identity. It's a great place to start and to continue to live when you're battling with your faith. Keep coming back to the teachings that Tammy gave us for the last few weeks. Remember who you are in him. God starts the whole ball rolling, and the next step is always remembering who we are. Gideon replies, "If I've found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it's really you talking to me. Please don't go away until I come back. Bring my offering instead of before you." And he says, "I will wait for your return," right? Just give me time to take a small step, a small sacrifice. We talked about that, that very personal understanding of God, sympathetic to the faith challenges of humanity and the process of faith. God understands It is small steps. It is ups. It is downs. It is disappointments. It is joys. That does not mean you don't have faith when it's up and down. Those questions, those small steps led Gideon to eventually say, ah, I've seen the angel of the Lord face to face. No, the truth of the matter is he's been talking to him for multiple points and spaces through this dialogue. But then suddenly he sees it. It has come about from him believing and taking some steps. You also can see that the steps that he took made him vulnerable. It's easy when you know the whole story ahead of time. He didn't know what was going to happen. When he tore down those altars to Baal, people could have just snuffed him out the very next day. The faith is always a bit vulnerable. It's not always safe. There are challenges when you're shifting your allegiance, which is another aspect of faith. He is shifting his allegiance from that God, those gods, to this one. Faith is always a process of remembering who we are and remembering where our allegiance is, to whom we serve. So he blows this trumpet. And people come from, men come from all around. It's hard to imagine, like, there's no internet, there's no written stuff. He's not writing letters and sending them duplicates. It's like no copier, no nothing. He blows that trumpet and the word starts to get out mouth to mouth. And what you see is that God's been working in the hearts of many, many, many people. People were waiting for this moment for God to make a move, call a person, have them stand, blow the trumpet, lead the charge. And there's a great deal of confirmation comes about. I kept thinking of this scene from Jerry Maguire where he has this epiphany about how he is going to go out and start a new business. And the business he's in, this conglomerate, all these people, is on the wrong page, doing the wrong stuff. And he makes this impassioned speech, calls people to follow him. And like one little secretary follows him. That's it. That's what Gideon may have imagined would happen. God's calling him to build this response, this one little person to build this response, to get the minions. What's going to happen? And then you see this 32,000 people, 32,000 men. Faith is a shared experience. It's not an individual sport. He even took 10 people with him in that first step where he built the altar, tore down the Baal altars. Gideon then returns to that promise and he says, if you're going to save Israel by hand, you have promised, then let me do these things. And he puts these fleeces out and he's really testing God. And we can relate to that. He's hesitating. What Gideon's faith story tells us in this moment, that faith doesn't mean that doubt doesn't exist. This is very important to hear. We beat ourselves up when we have these moments of doubt. And we have these legitimate questions about what we believe and why we believe it. We start to think about some of this tenets of the faith, and maybe you grew up in the church and you never really even thought about it that much. You just sort of accepted it. And then when you start looking closer at it, you're like, I don't know if I believe that. I don't know what this means. The life of faith certainly does include doubt. We are human. Faith doesn't deny doubt. It bridges it. You remember the quote of the boy's father who Jesus healed? He says, I believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. That is the life of faith. And this is where it might be important to realize the concrete components of faith. Faith is more than just belief. Faith is more than just believing that there is a God and that even that he has a plan. that he's in charge. There is that component for sure. Our eyes open up and we realize, oh, God has moved and now you believe. But there is more to it. You might say faith is made up of a proposition, the doctrine, the beliefs that there is a God, that proposition, that there is this world that we can't see that God is orchestrating. But then there is also a posture associated with faith. And there are practices associated with faith. And I would say you put those things together, now you've got a fully comprehensive faith that can now grow. There are postulates that we believe. There are postures that we take, an allegiance, a giving in, a putting your weight into. We've used the metaphor of the guy that runs the wheelbarrow back and forth across the tightrope across Niagara Falls, right? He's really good at it. He can take bags of potatoes. He can put rocks in there. He never falls. He goes back and forth with this thing. And he asks the crowds that watch him, he goes, do you believe I can take a pile of bricks across here? Yeah, we believe it. We see it. Everyone believes that he can do it. And at some point he says, I'd like a volunteer to get in. That's a different level of belief. That's a new posture. Now you're putting your weight into it. Now you're taking steps to go over there and get in the thing. That's a big part of faith. It's more than just belief. There's a posture. There's an allegiance. I take my instructions from this person, King Jesus, and no one else, and I obey him, and I take steps. This is all part of my faith. James, the brother of Jesus, famously said, faith without deeds is dead. Faith without deeds isn't faith in a biblical sense. Doubt in the proposition. Is there a God? Is he here? Are the promises true? Are the things that I believe is real? When we waver on that stuff, we answer that with posture and practices. Beautiful verse in the Old Testament in Chronicles. So the eyes of the Lord, I'm paraphrasing, search to and fro to strengthen the heart of a faithful man. Take great solace in that verse. When my heart wavers, God is searching for the one who continues in their faith even when their heart wavers. That's what it is, to have faith and to be faithful. Our faith answers the doubts of the postulates. We keep taking the steps that he's called us to. And we keep believing the promises. When doubt raises its head and it seems like God has abandoned us or the promise has no hope, the person of faith stays engaged with God. That was the beauty of the story of Job. That was what was different about Job than all of the other people around him. Even though Job wasn't even always as accurate as the other people, he stayed in conversation. He kept engaging with God. The faithful one stays loyal and obedient to the call and the disciplines of faith, even when they have questions. Your faith is going to look different than the faith of the person next to you, and the call is going to be different, and the outcomes are going to be different in many ways. You might not end up being in command of an army of 32,000 people. Faith works itself out in innumerable ways through the people of God, even though there are some common ways that we work together. Peter said, each of you should use whatever gift you have to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. Your faith, your role, your obedience is never a solo sport in God's economy, and it's buoyed by the confirmation of others. Although it's unique, you want to include others in your process of prayer and your call and your accountability. Faith includes other people. They will buoy your faith. They'll strengthen your commitment. We do this thing together, just like Takasha was talking about. A couple more things, I'll wrap it up here. I don't don't think it's important. I just think it's important to note, to remember that faith is a trust exercise of immersion and action into an alternative and invisible world. As crazy as that sounds, that's what's going on. The writer of Hebrews says, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed of God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. That's part of the reason faith is required and why it's so difficult. We're putting our hope, we're putting our lives, we're putting our actions, our choices into something we can't see. But we know there is something much bigger going on than what we can see. And we're living our lives, believers, Christians, followers of Jesus, those who are centered on God, are actually living this life with an awareness that something else much bigger is going on. It's a little nutty from a rational point of view. But this is what we believe. This is our faith. So we're going to dig into that statement of faith and wrap things up here. You guys are going to sing some more. This is going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be challenging and all that stuff. I think I mentioned, I just want to reiterate this metaphor that we're going to use, this trellis and this vine thing. A statement of faith is simply our way of saying clearly and humbly that our lives are measured by a different story, and these are the tenets of that story. The statement of faith tells us again and again, and those that are interested in who we are, that we're anchored in Christ, not in politics or progress or performance. That our unity comes from not uniformity on every opinion and issue, but by gathering around this common center. That we're anchored in Christ, we're agreeing upon central doctrine, allows us to listen to others without fear, to love without condition, to remain united even when we disagree. And it's just good to remember that life doesn't flow from our doctrine. Sometimes we can get real, real excited about our own interpretations and our own doctrines. Life flows from Jesus. He says, I am the vine, you're the branches. He is the lifeblood of the church. Statements of faith, doctrine, they're not the aim, they're the structure upon which the faithful life flourishes along with Jesus. It allows faith to grow into maturity, anchored in truth. It's not supposed to be a fence to create a manageable kingdom. Basic doctrine is very helpful in support of a faithful life and an expanding kingdom. Without it, if the vine has no trellis, it grows along the ground, wherever it wants. It climbs whatever it can at the risk of itself and damage of other things. Grows, finds other supports or no support. It becomes tangled and unhealthy. So trellis is a foundation for formation. And just like branches follow the vine and grow according to God's design, that's what we want to do. We want this to be something that supports us. And then lastly this. Gideon just kept coming back to the promise of the future. And we need to do the same. For the children of God, those who follow Jesus, supported by a set of profound truths, propositions, carried forward by this unshakable, beautiful, eternal future. They're like bookends in a sense that create this space for posture and practice. Read this again. Faith is the confidence in what we hope for and an assurance about what we do not see. It's not a vague wish or a sentimental dream. It's the sure hope that the one who conquered death will welcome us into life unending. Our faith rests on these postulates and these promises that the brokenness of today will give way to the wholeness of tomorrow, that every tear will be wiped away, that love will have the final word. That hope strengthens us in hardship, steadies us in doubts, stirs us to live with courage. Because the story we're part of does not end in despair, but in glory. All right, so we end here where we began, with faith, active faith, built on the solid foundation of truth, who God is, who man is, what sin is, who Jesus is, what the church is, what eternity is. That robust sort of faith steadies us, holds us together, leans us toward eternity. Because here's the thing. If Jesus is Lord, then his kingdom is coming. And our lives and our church are drawn forward by that eternal hope. Amen. Amen, amen, amen.